Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 139 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where some guys get together to talk about the place where God and gaming culture come together. I'm Mike Perna, and this week that snappy intro is actually a bit of a stretch of the truth. This is going to be another one of those where it's just me, and I'm the only one here to talk about this stuff. Last time this happened, it was due to a last-minute technical difficulty. That doesn't even begin to explain the confluence of awful that has brought us to this solo host place once more. Our man Daniel Fisher is out gallivanting through the wilderness of day job land. Now, we knew that. We planned for it, so Jeff and I were gearing up to do a duo GSP when I got deathly ill on our usual recording date, so we planned a new one. Then on our rain date, Jeff Romo's computer decided that it was no longer fit for this mortal coil, and decided to shuffle off. It was fried so hard that Jeff had to call in experts to look at it. I was this close to just scrapping this episode altogether and jumping to episode 140, the same way some buildings don't have a 13th floor on their elevators. However, I will not be daunted by the overwhelming mishaps and shenanigans. Y'all come to GSP looking for insights on faith, gaming, and ministry with just a hint of in-jokes and stupidity for taste, and I will not let you go without on my watch. Besides, there's actually quite a bit to talk about this week. Now, originally, this was where Jeff was going to tell you about all the behind-the-scenes greatness that happened when he appeared on the Ladies of the Roundtable Twitch stream right around Halloween to play a D&D one-shot with them. You may remember that I got a chance to be a guest on their show a while back, and through the course of that interview, I found out that a number of the Lort ladies wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons and always wanted to learn how to play it and learn how to do tabletop role-playing, most of them being more video game-focused. And I couldn't let that go, so I called Jeff, and Jeff called Holly, and before we knew it, the event had taken shape. While the game wasn't a Ravenloft game, there was no mist, as far as I could tell, that shipped a whole bunch of people off to a game filled with vampires and craziness, much to my chagrin. It definitely did have a spooky flair, and Jeff, being the consummate GM that he is, was on point as usual with crafting suitably appropriate environments and creepy NPCs along the way. While I wasn't able to watch the full stream because I had a previous engagement, I was able to catch a significant portion of the end of it as it was airing live, and I have to say, I'm a little jealous. In what I'm guessing was an homage to the holiday, all the participants were dressed up. Now, this ranged from simply cloaks and sunglasses and stuff like that, all the way up to elaborate makeup and full-bore costumes. My boy Jeff was GMing dressed up like a Sith Lord with a black cloak like he was in the middle of Star Wars. And I can't say I didn't give him a hard time for not bothering to dress up for our events, too. Hopefully he'll be able to rectify this in future streams on our channel. Definitely make sure, and I'm going to link this in the show notes, to go over to the Ladies of the Roundtable video on demand to find out where you can get the video of Jeff running this game with the ladies. It is well worth your time. It was a super good game, and I hope that you guys enjoy that. Speaking of streams, it just so happens that you guys had the opportunity to partake as some new and familiar voices to our channel. We're coming across a stream actually not on our YouTube channel, but on the Inroads Ministries Facebook page recently, as they're going to be running a short campaign through the newest Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition campaign called Storm King's Thunder. Sadly, my voice is not one of them, as I've just got too much on my plate right now, both offline and online. But if you're listening to me talk right now, and you're really missing Daniel's dulcet twang, go over there to our Inroads Facebook page, and you can hear him, Sean, and some other members of the regulars community playing a slightly homebrewed version of the campaign over there. I'm really interested in Storm King's Thunder because I'm always intrigued by interacting with NPCs and villains that are literally the size of a small mountain. This campaign seems to be full of that. It seems to be a whole mess of the people you're interacting with can basically squish you like a bug, so I'm super interested to see how that plays out. I haven't talked to Daniel or Sean or any of the guys yet about scheduling and the regularity of when they'll be posting those videos, But if you haven't gone over and liked the Inroads Facebook page yet, you should probably do that so that you'll get a notification whenever they get those videos posted. And while it probably goes without saying, since Daniel's involved, you can also go over to these streams and basically use it as a primer for Daniel's all-time favorite game hosting platform. Because, of course, they're playing on Fantasy Grounds instead of the Roll20 UI that you're used to seeing from us. Of course, the major event that happened on the Inroads front happened just yesterday, and it's why I'm rushing to get this recorded, put together, and posted before I get yelled at for being up too late. Starting yesterday, November 5th at 8 a.m., ending this morning, November 6th at 8 a.m., myself and the rest of the Inroads regulars team set out to play games for 25 hours, thank you Daylight Savings Time, for local children's hospitals. Before I go into some of the details about my own experiences with this event, I want to go over some of the good news and bad news of the event. As is usually the way with these things, I'll start with the bad news and get that out of the way. As a team, our goal was set to raise $2,000 for our hospitals this year. I was so excited because there was a potential for us to actually get it. We were so close last year. We were only $100 away from hitting that $2,000 goal. This year, yeah, we were a little farther away. We only raised about 67% of that goal. I do want to make it clear that our team members did great work and were really out there trying to get that support. We intentionally set the team's goal at a level that, while attainable, still makes us stretch beyond what we necessarily expect to get. That's what goals do. That's when goals are at their best. But there's also good news I want to share with you guys as well. Even at 67%, we're still coming in at about $1,300, a little bit over that for our hospitals. So that's not a small amount of money going to help these kids. I was happy that I was able to reach my personal fundraising goal of $500 that's on its way to the folks at Children's Specialized Hospital here in New Jersey. Those folks do great work, and I'm glad that myself and other members of the team were able to make that happen, at least to a partial degree of what we wanted to see happen. If you're listening to this and you either forgot that Extra Life happened this past weekend, or you made some room in your budget and you can now make a donation even if you couldn't then, you can still donate to our team's fundraising efforts through till the end of this year, and it will count towards this year's event. I'll be sure to put the link in the show notes of this episode so that you can do that if you'd like. Either way, I want to thank everybody who lost their extra hour of sleep with us in order to help these kids, and everyone who donated to our players in support of their hospitals.
Now that all that business-related stuff about Extra Life is over and done with, let me tell you about my Extra Life. This event was our first annual event as a ministry. In fact, it dates back to when we were just this podcast and Inroads wasn't even a dream yet. Not only do I love it because it's a great cause to help some really brave, wonderful kids and their families, as well as the doctors and medical staff that support them, but it's a game day that is both an open-door public event and also one that we tend to keep on the smaller end of the spectrum, playing just with our team members and people that they invite to come out and spend their day playing with us for the kids. As such, I get to put aside some of my president of a gaming ministry responsibilities and just be a guy who really wants to play all the games stacked up on the table over there. Bar none, Extra Life is the event where I personally get the most of my gaming done, and this year was no exception. While I didn't bring all the games of the Inroads Traveling Library, I brought about half of them from the collection to the event, and really I brought a lot of them with the intention of trying to clear my personal shelf of shame. If you've never heard that term before, often when board gamers refer to the shelf of shame, it's in reference to titles that they've purchased that they've never even played yet. For more of us than we'd like to admit, that proverbial shelf can sometimes be so full of titles that it's about to rip itself off the wall. Because of the nature of the ministry, my shelf of shame is actually pretty small. There's simply no money in either my personal or ministry budget to go throwing cash around on games unless I know that there's some kind of value in there and that I will get it to the table. Even so, I can't say there's nothing on my shelf, And this year, I went out of my way to try and fix that. Some of the games I got to play this year were titles that I'd never played before because Sean, our only volunteer that also dares to live here in New Jersey with me, came up to play with us and brought some of his games to fill in the gaps from the traveling library. I got to play games I'd only heard about before, like Saloon Tycoon, where you race to build a 3D saloon on your game board to compete in secret and public goals. The game was a ton of fun, and I could easily see myself getting my own copy so I'll have it for events that Sean can't get to. I got to play games that I played ages ago, but it's been so long that it might as well have been new to me. Like the bamboo-chewing panda goodness that is Takinoko, or the "of course I can burn through that corner, I'll be fine" goodness of Formula D. However, there are two games that I actually kickstarted that have been on my shelf for ages and yet never saw table time until this year. Those are Operation Faust and Epic the card game. Let me start by talking about Epic. It seems to be the sort of love it or leave it game when it comes to viewing reviews and ratings when on any site that I've seen on the internet. The best way I have to describe it is Magic the Gathering if you took out all the problems with having to get 7 or 8 lands in play before you even think about putting out all the really cool events and monsters. Every card in Epic either costs 0 or 1 gold, and you get 1 gold at the beginning of every turn. It's incredibly quick, and there's something immensely satisfying about putting out a 10-10 creature with flying on your first turn. While the game didn't make me leave screaming about how it was the greatest game ever, as a quick game to play if you've got 10 or 15 minutes to kill, it does its job really admirably. I'm actually glad I got it. Likewise, Operation Faust is a game that I kickstarted due to the auspices of it being Monuments Men the game. A story about getting priceless artworks out of Nazi Germany and back into museums for the world to enjoy. I was excited about this game, but apparently I was mostly alone in that regard, because it's been a hard sell for anybody I've tried to get to play. After getting it to the table and finally coming up with a sales pitch that says, it plays like Coup, but instead of eliminating other players, you're trying to get $1 million worth of artwork out before the other players do, I'm fairly confident it'll see more gameplay now. I like that the cards have 2 different functions each, whether you play them in your hand or on the table in front of you. And I just really enjoy the feel of the game that's balanced length of play and simplicity with social deduction and strategy. I'm really glad I held on to this one despite the fact that there was this initial trepidation to ever get it played. This year I also integrated a little bit of role-playing into the roster. Like last year, my monthly Numenera crew all happened to either be members of the team or simply weren't doing anything that afternoon. So we integrated a session into the festivities. Not everybody could make it, but we put together an epic emotional moment that literally ended with a stand-up and cheering kind of dice roll, with tears in eyes as the party was able to successfully save a beloved Cheerog NPC named Skex that they had released earlier from a testing lab in a previous session. Skex would later go on to become the leader of his clan and assure the party that Skex and his family are their friends for life now. It was pretty cool to see. I also got to play a game of Reflections with a familiar face to our role-playing games on our channel. Alyssa often appears as part of our role-playing experiences both on our YouTube channel and on our Facebook page now. She's part of our Victoriana crew, she'll be playing in our Numenera game, and she also is appearing on the aforementioned Storm King's Thunder campaign. So when I told her that I brought character sheets to this indie RPG where you play as 2 samurai and you basically recreate pivotal moments in their lifetime that lead to a life or death duel, she was in. The short version of this game's mechanic is that you play out a series of scenes trying to obtain certain objectives. If you successfully complete your objectives, say something like you convince your rival to go against his honor, you are able to obtain a certain number of dice between 1 and 4, depending on the difficulty. If you fail, you add dice equal to what your opponent was able to do in a different pool called Hatred. When all the scenes are completed, you total up your dice. You can choose to put away your hatred and just go with the dice in your pool, or you can embrace your hatred, potentially getting extra dice, but at a cost. See, any of your regular dice that are higher values than the highest rolled on your hatred dice are eliminated. It's a risky gamble that might pay off big. When all the dice are rolled, the player who has rolled the most number of the highest dice value is victorious and walks away from the duel alive. The loser is then forced to rip their character sheet in two and present the pieces as a trophy to the victor. I've played this game twice now, and both games came out completely different. The only thing that's the same is that I'm so emotionally caught up in the build-up and execution of this duel that I've been rendered speechless after it all gets resolved for minutes on end. This game is amazing, and I highly recommend it. Alright guys, up to this point, and it's fairly obvious, you know, I'm pretty confident you can understand this if you've ever listened to me talk on a normal episode and you hear me talking on a solo episode. I think I've mentioned this in the past, and I will do it now just in case this is your first episode of the podcast. We're always about just off-the-cuff interactions. I mean, we do a little editing, but we've always been about just hearing what the guys have to say. For the solo ones, I tend to be more scripted just because it's easier for me to interact with the guys than it is to come up with all the things that I want to say. But as we, you know, this is going to be a much shorter episode because it's just me and because of the fact that I need to get myself to bed after a long day of not sleeping. But as we kind of make the turn on this shortened episode, I wanted to go completely off script here. I wanted to not worry so much about making sure that everything is absolutely pristine and you know, every word choice is perfect, because I want you guys to, well, I want to really embrace myself the emotion of this topic. And this was going to be something that Jeff and I both talked about when we did this, but again, oh my goodness, the crap storm that was trying to get this episode together. As this episode was going to be recorded, and as most of probably everybody in the gaming hobby who has been a role player for any length of time during the 1980s and even the early 90s, one name has become infamous in the role-playing world, and that is Jack Chick. And recently, Jack Chick passed away. If, like some members in the tavern, you have been fortunate enough to have never heard that name, I'm going to give you a brief introduction into who that man was and what his ministry has been about. Jack Chick created an entire line of tracts, religious tracts, gospel tracts, and I want to be completely fair here. I will say that there are a number of them, all of them the same format. They're usually black and white comic strips, and there are some of them that I've looked at them because most of them are available in digital format on their website, and some of them are really great. I have to give him credit. There are some that do a really good job of, in a very simple way, putting forth the gospel message, and they're really kind of fantastic. But those are not the ones, sadly, that Jack Chick and his organization are known for. The ones that they're known for are the ones that deal with a lot of topics that are basically a fire and brimstone, turn or burn, you're all going to hell kind of messages. And a lot of them have to do with things like rock music or various topics that are going to cause some people to stir and a lot of people to giggle. One that we've mentioned in previous episodes of this podcast and with previous guests is a particular track called Dark Dungeons. In Dark Dungeons, I won't spend a lot of time because, like I said, we've talked about it in previous episodes of the podcast. Dark Dungeons basically follows a couple of girls who get into Dungeons and Dragons, and they're entered into some kind of cult, and once their characters reach a certain level, they actually learn real magic. When they're the one The one girl's character dies and she ends up killing herself because her friends refuse to even speak to her because her character died. Anybody who's ever played a role-playing game knew that this was ridiculous, but a lot of people didn't understand that that was the case and so treated this as gospel. And there's a lot of pent-up downright hate in the role-playing world for people who have this mentality now because of the fact that they spent decades getting hammered for basically something that doesn't have any kind of real-world implication. I can't say that I'm not one of those people. I have absolutely no love for this aspect of Jack Chick's ministry. I have absolutely a lot of burden, actually, for this aspect of the ministry, because I read through these and there are other, like I said, this is just one topic that's part of me and part of my experience, but there are so many ones. Like, there are ones that I know that there will be people in the tavern and even my own family who there's a lot of them that blast the Catholic Church and, like, not even, like, you know, disagreeing on theology, but just absolutely blast them for being, you know, tools of Satan. And I'm just like, I wish that I could say that I'm always good about, you know, doing what I'm supposed to and, you know, caring for my brothers in Christ and turning the other cheek when people want to attack me. And I can't say that I'm always successful in that. There's absolutely no way that I can do that. But when Jack Chick passed away, there was this wave that came over the internet. And it was a wave that came over my social media and websites and all sorts of stuff that, to not to make light of or trivialize what the emotion that was behind it, but it was almost as if I was viewing a montage of that scene from The Wizard of Oz when the Munchkins come out and start singing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. There were people who were I literally saw somebody said, I'm going to go dance on his grave. Like, I saw a lot of people who were relieved and just celebrating the fact that this man had died. And I want to make some things perfectly clear. I don't agree with this aspect of his ministry. I think that it is literally contradictory to the way Inroads does things. We're about building bridges to people. We're about building relationships and knowing people and seeking to find understanding about where they're coming from, why they've made the decisions that they've made, why they do the things they do, and what do they do. Like, everything about us is about building relationships and connections where there weren't any before. And a lot of this approach didn't really meet its goal. The approach that Jack Chick did was basically say, here's everything that's wrong with you, and you need to fix it. And it didn't even especially work great. Like, I know people who found a Chick track and God used it to change their life. God can do a lot of things with a lot of stuff. That doesn't mean that there's inherent value in that thing. The problem that I saw with these tracks and this method is that a lot of them were based off of, I'll just say it, nonsense. I'll use Dark Dungeons as the example of it. Anybody who never played a role-playing game before that were reading this and were championing it as truth didn't know what it was actually like to play these games. So the audience, the core audience of that gospel tract were people in churches that didn't know anything about the game. People who weren't Christians, who weren't in churches, and who had come across these tracts because somebody either handed it to them or they found it in a store because people would leave them places. Anybody who wasn't a Christian and was into Dungeons and Dragons looked at this and laughed. Because the statements that are being made here are ludicrous. I've made them before on this podcast. I've had characters that go way past level 8, and I've never once had anybody offer to teach me real magic. You want to know why? Because it's not how it works. That's not even kind of how any of this works. So, I understand the frustration that there was so much pain and so much hurt that was the result of ignorance and a lack of any kind of empathy. So I get that when this man died, there's a gut reaction to snap back and to celebrate the fact that that influence, that person who spearheaded so much pain in the lives that we lived back then, especially those of us who kind of, I kind of came in at the tail end. I was into gaming after the brunt of the Satanic Panic happened. But I know a lot of people who were neck deep in it. And there's so much pain there. But here's my challenge. And it's something that I challenged myself, and it's something that I've challenged a lot of people in the aftermath of this man's death. Death is never, never something to be celebrated. Your hurt is very real, and I want to make that absolutely clear. I understand where that's coming from. But it's never okay to wish death on anyone or to be excited that someone died. I have no idea whether Jack Chick's faith was completely legit and he just really was passionate about seeing people turn to God, or if he was a person who just says, oh yeah, I totally believe in God. It's not even at all a way to manipulate people and gain power and authority over them. I don't know the man. In fact, I know a lot of people who have no way of even kind of knowing the man, because he was a downright recluse at the end of his life. I think the last interview that I saw out of the research that I did, now granted it wasn't extensive research, but the last interview I saw was like back in the 80s or 90s. The man just simply didn't appear on camera. And so I will at no point make any kind of claim about his place, but here's the thing. My own impression, my own thoughts, I think the man really is a believer, and I say is because I believe that he met God and he was looking forward to that. I believe that God has enough in him to forgive Jack Chick. And I believe that because I want to believe that God has enough to forgive me and my stuff. It doesn't take away the fact that in my opinion, the man did some awful things. He said some awful things. But based on the things that I've, the other things, the other tracks, the good ones, the ones that really do show the gospel, I think the man really did love God and wanted other people to love God too, and to know him, and to know about how faith can save. And so my challenge to all of us is to continue in the understanding of growing connection. Because the idea of celebrating this man's death only seeks to sever those connections. And it makes us more isolated. And it makes us everything that he said we were. And I know you don't want that, because I know I don't want that. We have to be about the business of learning about each other, about knowing about each other. Because that's how we actually communicate the love of God to each other. We can't speak from this place of ignorance. We can't speak of this place of assumption and say, these people are all like that, and thus they need to hear this. Because a lot of times we're dealing with second, third, and fourth hand sources of what that's like. I'm very thankful for the fact that in my life and in various times in my existence, I have had a very diverse collection of people in my life. Diverse faith claims, even within the Christian faith, I've seen a lot of denominational backgrounds. I know a lot of people from different socioeconomic places, different ethnic groups, different countries of origin. I'm so thankful that that's a part of my history because of the fact that it has instilled in me this desire to know more about where people are and what they do and why they do it. I think as a people, as gamers and as Christians and as just people living in the human race, we need to be about building more of those connections, not less. We need to stop trying to fix before we understand what it is. We need to start learning and being open to what the day-to-day of somebody that has nothing to do with us deals with and lives with. I think a lot of the issues that have been bubbling up and just like completely overtaking our news feeds, our TV shows, our everything. I think so much of what that is that we, and I think I've even said this in the last episode, is our lack of connecting with each other in a real and tangible way. And sadly, I think this man's life has been about embracing that kind of disconnect. It's about continuing this understanding of being other, not in a, you know, in a likeness of Christ, but just being just so other, that those people are so other. And I guess, completely, you know, as I wrap up this episode, I just want to say that we can't be that. That we can't be so other that we don't know how to talk to each other. That we can't be so other that we only speak in ignorance about somebody who we share our existence with. These people are everywhere. We are among them. We are them. And if we have any right to say anything to them, we can't be about the business of correcting from ignorance. We have to be about understanding in humility. When the next episode happens, we'll get the guys back. We'll be back to business as normal. You won't have to deal with me droning on in my pre-recorded scripted stuff. You won't have to deal with me going on in my rambling non-scripted stuff. You'll be able to hear all of us making the same stupid jokes, the same, you know, ridiculous references as we try to connect faith and gaming. But I wanted to make sure that we talked about this because it was worth talking about. And I hope that you guys are challenged by it and, you know, like me, are trying to just get one step closer to be a better person, the kind of person that God wants me to be. That said, guys, always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.